Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
You know, I really hadn't, given much thought to the economic impact that Ichiro has had on our region here since he's become a Mariner. And then there was a really interesting article written by Carl Baker, Seattle Times business reporter, on how much we get visitors from Japan who are here primarily because they want to see Ichiro playing baseball at Safeco Field. And the U.S. Department of Commerce says that Japan sends more tourists to Seattle than any other country. I guess in 2011 that amounted to 64,000 tourists. And like I say, the vast majority of those folks in town to, you know, take in a game at Safeco Field. And, you know, then they go to Mount Rainier, and then they go to Boeing. They tour the Museum of Flight. They go to the Pike Place Market. They see Star. I mean, they're spending a lot of money here. And with Ichiro moving to the Big Apple, well, we're taking a bite out of the economy here. David Blandford with the Seattle Convention and Visitors Bureau joins me here on Newsline PM. Hi, David.
Hi, Ken.
So how big a hit are we going to wind up taking?
Boy, that's the question. We think we'll take some kind of a hit. We're expecting that for the balance of this year that we won't see much effect because most of the tour itineraries that are on the shelf, so to speak, are already in place. But for 2013, that's when we would maybe start to see some kind of a dip or some effect, and the same thing in 2014. Tour product is developed months and months, if not years ahead, and so we're reaping the benefit of having Ichiro as a Mariner right now. So let's enjoy it while we can.
Boy, that just, as I said, until I read this Baker article in the Times, this is something I guess I really hadn't, it hadn't sunk in. I mean, yeah, I think there is you realize that there are a lot of Japanese people who come here to see Ichiro, but when you're looking at 64,000 in 2011, and that was an off year. Ichiro was, you know, not doing as well. I can only imagine what we were getting in 2006 and 2007. It probably was far more than the 64,000 we got last year.
Yeah, more like 80,000 or 80,000 plus, probably. And, you know, if there's a bright spot, I think that it is in looking at the fabric of the itineraries that are all developed out of Japan now. And probably two-thirds of them coming to Seattle are non-baseball itineraries, which is really interesting. Those are people who are coming not during baseball season, but other times of the year. So they don't even have the option of seeing Ichiro play. They're tasting food and wine and going to Mount Rainier, as you say, sipping Starbucks coffee, taking Boeing tours, and doing a bunch of other tourism attractions that Ichiro helped make famous. So we certainly hope that we'll see some spinoff even after he's gone.
So 64, let's just take last year's figures, 64,000 people. What would that equate to in terms of tourism dollars spent? Do you have any sense of that?
Millions, although I don't have a figure right in front of me, but it is significant.
So we're talking hotels and taxis and car rentals.
Absolutely.
And restaurants and, you know, tourist attraction, Doc Maynard's and whatever.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, too, that Japanese travelers, like most overseas travelers, spend a lot more time here than domestic travelers do. They have the time to spend. They want to really see the destination thoroughly. And so those dollars add up.
So let me ask the stupid question. Is there anything to capitalize on that would help kind of sustain the number of Japanese tourists who've, you know, grown somewhat accustomed to coming to Seattle? Is there something else that we can put on the table, something else that we can kind of use as a lure to continue attracting such a significant number of people?
I think if there is, it has something to do with our rather mythic lifestyle. The Japanese traveler has always been interested in the Seattle cool aspect, nature, combination of urban sophistication and kayaking, right outside your hotel room door. Ichiro also, while he was here, really embraced the Seattle lifestyle and spoke highly of it. And I think that by way of his lifestyle and his tenure here, that I think Japanese tourists have really been interested in what makes Seattle special as a place to live, visit, do business. And so we hope that Seattle will stay famous and stay, a big question mark in the mind of the Japanese traveler.
I realize that this is, kind of a question that really right now does not have an answer, given the number of tourism dollars that are available for commercials and promotion and things of that nature. We no longer have a state tourism board. And I know there's some businesses that have banded together in an attempt to kind of keep the tourism industry alive in respect to, advertising. But is there a way, do we spend any money over in Japan right now to, advertise?
Oh, yeah. We sure do. And Seattle's Convention and Visitors Bureau, in conjunction with the Port of Seattle, very actively is promoting and continuing to promote tourism in Japan. For example, we have a public relations and marketing office in Tokyo that does nothing but promote Seattle and Washington State throughout the year. They work with tour operators, travel agents, travel media, and that will continue. That is not going away.
And we still have some Japanese position players. We have a pitcher.
Exactly.
So we've got Kawasaki and we've got Iwakuma. I mean, do those obviously they don't hold the same cachet as Ichiro, but does that at least bait the hook?
I think it does. I think over the past 10 years, which is a really long time to have Ichiro here and other players as well, that we've developed a real heritage of baseball, and with famous Japanese players coming over here, I think that Japanese tourists and potential tourists really understand that and appreciate it. So there's sort of a baseball trail that's been developed here, and we certainly hope that even with Ichiro gone, that they will still come and they will still want to see games.
Well, it's cheaper to fly to Seattle than it is to New York. So from Japan. So, plus you're tacking another 5.5 hours onto whatever flight time you have out of Japan.
But, good point.
Yeah, I mean, because I can't see New York picking up the spoils on this. Although, New York is a lure in and of itself simply because it's, New York.
That is true. That is true. But I hearken back to a tagline we used in Japan to promote tourism a couple of years ago, and it was very much on the heels of Ichiro coming to play here. And it was called Living Cool, Loving Nature. And that tagline
beats Metro Natural.
I think it does, too. That tagline, though, really resonated with Japanese citizens and travelers and potential travelers. They really understood that fit. For Seattle, maybe for Ichiro as well, and that when they came over to Seattle, that they could really be a part of that, really.
That whole experience. It's going
that
to be
whole experience.
It's going to be interesting to see, because you're right. I think there's going to be a big fall off, and there's going to be a hit. Let's just hope it's not too big a hit. David Blandford from the Seattle Convention and Visitors Bureau, appreciate the update. Thanks. Good information there.
Thanks, Ken.
All right. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
To try to figure out a way, because that's a lot, and that's 2011. Like I said, if Ichiro is that big a draw, when Ichiro was in his glory years, you're talking 80,000-plus tourists. That's a big hit.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
I don't know. Maybe I'm out of the loop on this one. I don't know. I could quite possibly be. But it seems to me that this is the first hint of controversy that I've come across in respect to the Seattle Sounders. Hugely popular Seattle Sounders team. Soccer, I can't think of another city in this country where soccer has taken off the way it has here in Seattle. But apparently, there's some sensitivity to some of the chants that are being used at some of the Sounder games here in Seattle. Tom Glasgow joins me on Newsline PM to talk a little bit about this. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ken. Thank you for calling me at Chateau Glasgow today. How are you? Hey, you know, this is an interesting story, and it's a chant that isn't just used here in Seattle, but it's used at a number of venues around Major League Soccer. And the commission, this has become an issue, a hot topic right now, because the commissioner, Ken, of Major League Soccer is a guy by the name of Don Garber, and he's made it an issue. The chant occurs when the opposing team's goalie takes a goal kick. And every time he takes that kick, the phrase is, I'm gonna deliver it in a safe way. Don't worry about the dumb button. it goes, "You suck." And then it rhymes with pass mole. Okay?
You delivered that so delicately.
I've been working on it just for you for a good hour or so.
Thank you, because I'm likely to just blurt it out, you know.
You can get away with
no,
that.
No, I don't think so.
So this is, it's not only is it very easy to hear when you are in attendance at a game, be it CenturyLink Field or elsewhere around the league, but it is also captured on television broadcasts. And the commissioner is saying, in regards to this chant, it infuriates me. It's just so uncreative and ridiculous. We need to stop it. Our broadcast partners don't like it. When vulgarity is going over the air, it's an issue with the FCC, and we've got to stop it. Question is, how do you stop it, and will those who enjoy chanting that go along with the program?
See, and I got to tell you, my reaction to this would be, if you go to the sports fans, any soccer team where this chant is being used, and say, we don't want you to do that anymore, it would get louder and more distinct, and in fact, there might be more a different level of profanity kicked into gear. It may.
I will say this. They had the same problem with the New England Revolution of Major League Soccer, and their team president went to their supporters club and said, look, this has just got to stop. That supporters club didn't like it, but so far they have complied, and that's probably what it's going to take. I know for a fact Sounders ownership is on board with the commissioner, so I would anticipate they're going to have a sit-down with their primary supporter group, which is Emerald City supporters. Not that they're exclusive when it comes to this chant, but that may be where they go to try to begin the process of getting this out of CenturyLink Field.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm thinking that this is going to get worse before it gets better. It's just my gut tells me that, particularly here in Seattle, people don't like to feel as if they are being controlled, manipulated, dictated to. The independent spirit that exists in this city, plus the level of enthusiasm for that sports team.
Yeah.
I think you're...
Well, I'm not someone who's against free speech, but I will say this. I think you have to take into consideration that, especially in those games, there are a lot of young kids who are enthusiastic youth soccer players who are there with their family. And I don't think it's the right of a group that wants to chant this to dictate to a parent why they have to explain why they're doing that and, you know, what the word means for the real young ones. So, you know, I hope they would come up with something more creative than what they have. It's acceptable not only to fans in the house, but to the commissioner and the team and to viewers on TV.
And, you know, it's not that I disagree with you. My sense is that the spirit of people, that there's going to be kind of a dig their heels in, and I'm not going to let them do this to me. Tom Glasgow.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point.
All right, Tommy, good talking with you, man. Thanks for dropping by.
You bet.
Yeah, it's you suck, you oh. There you go. That's what it is.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So talking about profanity at the Sounders game is one thing. What about profanity at work? There was a survey put together by Career Builder that says swearing, dropping the F-bombs and loads of profanity can actually hurt you career-wise. I don't know if I can attest to that because, as people will tell you, my language can be very colorful. We'll talk about swearing at work in a moment.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Well, I'm keeping this survey away from Clayton. Thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here on Newsline PM. Jim Clayton's our general manager. Talking about this career builder survey that was released today. Basically what they're saying, and first of all, just let me, I'll run through this. It's about swearing at work. I please define for me what swearing is. Is damn a swear word? Is hell a swear word? Because those are like benign swear words. I don't think they count. Damn and hell don't count. But 62% of those surveyed in Washington, D.C. is the biggest metropolitan area for swearing. 62% of those surveyed in the nation's capital said, oh, yeah, we definitely swear at work. Denver, it was down to 60%. Chicago down to 58%, and L.A. 56%. Now, this I don't believe. I don't believe this. New York came in at number 9 with 46% of those who responded to the survey saying they used extremely colorful language. I am not buying that. In New York? Get out of here. Ryan Hunt is with CareerBuilder.com, joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going, Ken? Thanks for having me.
So what put this what put the survey in play? What was it that created this?
Well, you know, we were having a discussion around the office, and sometimes colorful language gets mentioned around our department, so we thought we'd ask hiring managers, employers, and different companies what they feel about it when or their workers start using four-letter words. And we were surprised that it does affect so many promotion decisions, even in this day and age where I think we've become a lot less sensitive to those words you were talking about.
So yeah, explain to me what does, in terms of the survey that you conducted, did you define what a swear word is?
We didn't define it, and that was largely because, you know, different people are more sensitive to different words than others, so we just kind of wanted to leave that open to
So you're doing a survey on swearing, but you're afraid to swear in the survey.
Well, yeah, pretty much. But, you know, I mean, the bottom line is, you know, people are sensitive to different things, so we left that open to the interpretation of the hiring managers who are often at the helm of promoting different workers within their organization.
And the results that you had here, I'm looking at them. Employers, 81% believe that the use of cuss words brings an employee's professionalism into question. That's a significant number, percentage.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and I think the context really matters here. I mean, in all of our jobs, we get stressed or angry and they let one fly. I think, though, what that really means is when people are perpetually and unnecessarily using swear words in their routine speech, that's where it kind of gets to be a little annoying and can question a worker's maturity.
See, I love profanity. I'm serious. I once started a book called, I titled it The Beginner's Guide to Creative Profanity.
Interesting.
I'm telling you. And one of these days I'll finish that thing, and it'll be a great stocking stuffer at Christmas time. I think it'll go over like gangbusters. I think that, you know, when you talk about swearing and profanity, I do look at the creativity involved. I like alliteration, you know. So, I mean, just think of the possibilities that exist when you begin putting certain words together in a way that sounds, you know, pleasant to the ear.
Yes, and I've heard a lot of good examples myself. You know, it'll be interesting to see if we do the survey again in 5 years, if the mindset of this has changed, if more people actually swear at work and less employers care if they do or not. I mean, that's definitely something we're going to want to follow up on to see if the culture continues to shift, because I think it probably has in the past decade or so.
Did you break this out into different types of workplaces? I mean, did you go to construction sites as well as banks, insurance offices, and police departments? Because I would imagine that there's probably a clear delineation where profanity is more accepted on the job than, you know, in other jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Manufacturing was a little bit higher. High-stress jobs like financial services, where guys are yelling at each other in the phones, were a little higher. Obviously, workers in customer service who are a little more prone to being fired if they ever get caught saying something off color. They were a little lower in the terms of the numbers they admitted to swearing. But there's definitely a delineation there. And you mentioned Washington, D.C. at the top of the segment, and I think that may reflect the high-stress polarization politically. I guess that may be why they are number one.
Hey, I think if you polled Congress, you'd get a higher number than 62%.
I think they'd be lying if they said they didn't swear on their jobs. I agree with you.
So did you also determine, and we're talking with Ryan Hunt with CareerBuilder.com on this swearing survey. Did you see a definitive impact on somebody's career because of that? So if you have 81% of employers saying, hey, if you use these cuss words, I'm going to question your professionalism, that means they're going to question, you know, advancement within the company.
Yeah. So that was one of the key questions we asked. And 50% of hiring managers, the people actually making these decisions, 57% of them said that they'd be less likely to promote someone who swears in the office. So even if you love swearing and people swear from time to time, it may seem harmless, but if the wrong ears catch that, apparently that affects their opinions of you in a way that can directly affect your career. So you have to be mindful of that, even if you personally really don't care.
And it also draws attention to what is described as a lack of maturity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one thing that they pointed out.
Hey, well, I definitely lack maturity. I'm fessing up to that one right away. All right,
well, regardless,
Ryan,
I still want to read your book.
Thanks, Ryan. Ryan Hunt with CareerBuilder.com. Good talking with you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Talk to you again soon.
I definitely want to open up the phones on this one. Do you swear at work? That's what I want to know. But here, let me caution you. I don't want you using any of those words that's going to get both of us into trouble, okay? So let's not push the limits on that because we do have the FCC to deal with. But my question to you, because I genuinely find this somewhat fascinating. First of all, I there is no way on God's great green wonderful earth that I believe New York came in at only 46%. There's just no way. Everybody in New York, with great regularity, drops the F-bomb. But number one is Washington, D.C., number two, Denver, number three, Chicago, number four, Los Angeles. You know what I should find out? I haven't been able to I need to look up where Seattle fell on this list. But in the interim, I want to take your calls. I want to know, this survey indicates that there's a lot of swearing going on. And I'm going to ask the simplest of questions. Do you swear at work? And do you think it's impacted your career? Have you been called into HR because of this? Have people complained about the language that you use around others? There's just a whole lot around in this. But it's a question that I'm seriously interested in having answered. And by the way, I'm serious. I really did start a book, The Beginner's Guide to Creative Profanity. 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. Hop on it.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
I don't think Seattle's even listed in this thing. So at least I can't find it. But let me ask you something. If you were to take a guess as to which age groups are most likely to swear at work and which age group is least likely to swear at work. So here are the age groups: 18 to 24, 25 to 34, 35 to 44, 45 to 54, and 55 and older. So out of those age groups, take a guess at which one is the most likely to swear and which age group is the least likely to swear. And I'll tell you what the survey results are in just a moment here, okay? Tricia in Bellevue, you're up at Newsline PM. What do you say?
So, Ken, I have a no potty mouth zone where I work. Anywhere I am, and they actually honor that. You should see them trying to put the words back into their mouth.
So this is you just don't allow it around you, period.
Well, I don't allow it. If they do it, they certainly apologize. They call me Mama T. And so I just tell them, flush it, I don't need to hear it.
Do you have a cuss jar that they have to put money in?
Well, I would be in Hawaii or I work at a construction company, and I'm told that's how it was. But I've actually had people clean it up since I've been there. I've been there 7 years. And actually, when I was interviewed, one of the people said, you know, I have a problem with my mouth. It's kind of bad. You have an issue with that. My response was, I found that people that have gone to college, whether you have or not, you'll find better words to use.
Well, props to you for turning a construction company into a no-cussing zone, Tricia.
I didn't say it was totally cuss-free, but they certainly honored around me.
All right. Thank you very much. 206-421-1000 here. John the Mailman, what do you say?
Well, Ken, you've known me long enough for you to know that I'm no prude, but I've been known to make a sailor blush. But I don't even like it. I don't like it when it's part of your everyday conversation. Now, if my computer crashes, I'm going to say some dirty words. But I've been around people that they can't say seven words without four of them being a cuss word. And I've asked them, do you eat with that mouth? You know, because it's not necessary. I think it's a sign of a weak mind myself.
Well, you know, and here's what I'll agree with. I agree with there are circumstances, there are places, there are times in which swearing just is not appropriate in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But I got to tell you, I have people who've known me for years are absolutely amazed that I can do this radio program or do town meeting for 19 years. You know, most of those were live shows and not cut loose with a cuss word.
Well, I'm dealing with the public all day. I certainly can't do it. I mean, it just wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. All right, and by the way, I owe you an email. I still have a response to that email that you sent me, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
And
all right.
You take care, man.
Bye.
All right. That's John the Mailman, one of our loyal listeners there. Larry, on a cell phone, what do you say? Do you swear at work? Hello, Larry.
Oh, yeah, you didn't say who. I didn't know whose cell phone.
Okay.
No, I'm self-employed, but just in general, I think that people who tend to swear a lot simply haven't gotten enough practice in trying to exercise the vocabulary. I don't appreciate it around me. I don't respect people that do it, and I think it's mostly a lack of not taking time to think of a better way to express their feelings.
You know, and here's the deal, because I'll tell you again, I'm fessing up here.
Oh, I know. You've fessed up before. Yeah, I've heard you talk about this.
Yeah, my language is salty, and I think I have a pretty good vocabulary. I have a good command of the English language. It's certainly not a lack of choice available to me when I drop, a cuss word. But I think it's become, I don't know how to explain it, to be honest with you. Because when I was growing up, my mom and dad, if I even said bum, I got my mouth washed out with soap. So I could never ever cuss around them or my grandparents. But I don't know what it is, and I appreciate your call. It's just gotten ingrained in me. It's nothing that I'm not trying to say this because I'm proud of it. I'm just stating it because it is a matter of fact. I want to remind you, I want you to take a guess. I want you to take a guess as to which age group is the most likely to swear at work and which age group is the least likeliest to share at work. And the age groups are 18 to 24, 25 to 34, 35 to 44, 45 to 54, and 55 and older. All right, Joanne, you're up on Newsline PM. Do you swear at work?
No, I taught school for 30 years, high school, and I never would ever swear at work because I wanted to make sure I was putting forth a good example to the kids. And if they did it, I always said, I don't expect that in my classroom.
How about in the teacher's lounge?
You know, very seldom did I ever hear anybody swear.
Okay.
I really think it's a lack of personality for some reason. You know,
I got tons of personality. I cuss all the time. Thanks, Joanne.
Well, I'm not saying I don't.
Okay.
When I work.
Hey, I want to. Okay, so here's the answer. You know what? Hang with me. I'm going to give you the answer to which age group is most likely to cuss and which age group is least likely in just a moment.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
All right, according to Career Builder, the age group that is most likely to swear while on the job are those who are between the ages of 35 and 44. 58% of them say they swear at work. The age group least likely to swear at work, the youngest, 18 to 24, 42% say they swear at work. That's amazing to me. I thought the younger crowd would be more prone to cutting loose with some profanity. But nope, 35 to 44, most likely. 18 to 24, least likely. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. We'll kick it back into gear tomorrow at precisely 6 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock. So I hope you'll join me. Twixt then and now, one favor to ask of you. Look out for each other out there.